CliffCentral.com. Unbranded on CliffCentral.com.
Welcome back to Unbranded. I'm Timothy Maurice, and this is the show that looks at brains and brands and how they impact each other, the show that merges human and brand behavior. Today, we explore how comedy can be used to confront and deal with social injustices and life in general. And, you know, today we thought we would bring in, you know, the person who I feel could really sort of speak to this subject the most, two-time Emmy-nominated comedian with a long history of comedic powers to deal with every social injustice from politics to leadership, Mr. Loiso Gola himself. What's up, bro?
Hey, thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's good to be here, man. I spent the whole night just burning data, listening, like, watching some...
I was actually talking about data yesterday, and she was young, and I was getting coffee, and she said, hey, how do you think the internet is affecting South Africa or changing South Africa? And I said, well, the internet is not really changing South Africa. It's really not, because if you... And she's like, what do you mean? And I said, because people don't think of the internet like water. Yeah. Like, it's not water. It's like a Coke. You see, when you put people, like, it's like when people go, I want to get a Coke. They go, okay, I got to purchase it.
Yes.
When they think water, they go to the tap. The access to it is so easy.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then she was like, no, but didn't you use Uber to get here? I was like, yo, man, Uber is like 4% of the population. So it's funny you should say that you're burning data, because you view it as something that's...
Yeah, exactly.
It's not like... Do you know?
We're
so detached from the internet. It's like an outside thing where other people just go, I have the internet.
Yeah, exactly. Now here, it's a completely... at home, for example, my contract, you know, I get unlimited data for $30 or something like that.
Yes.
And here, it's just, I'm like, yeah.
It's 1,500.
Yeah, minimum.
So
I spent...
Sorry, I just...
Yeah, no, I get it completely. And but I enjoyed it. I enjoy burning data on good comedy. Especially seeing the world react and respond to your comedy. I thought it was really interesting. There was one skit, I think you were in Edinburgh somewhere.
Yeah.
And the audience act like you were their boy. That's what I found interesting.
Yeah, but that you create that.
Okay.
They don't act like they don't act like they're everyone's boy. There's a way to get them on your side.
Sure.
And it's like a comedy thing sometimes when you're on stage and you purposefully isolate the audience to make them feel specific things. So when you do stand up, there's certain words that we use that is inclusive to the audience. We... So
sure.
You say, oh, so we, or you could go, when you say I, you isolate them. You say I, then they go, oh, okay, that's you. If you say, oh, we should, and we, do you, ooh, and then it, you know what
guys.
I mean? Those are some of the
tricks. That's what I love about
tricks.
You guys. People don't understand. This is a skill. You guys are professionals. Grown people on stage. You're not just up talking.
We're not three-year-olds spinning.
And that's the beauty. So that's why I wanted to have this conversation, because comedy is a social tool. And what I'm really fascinated by is you guys have most of the top comedians, like millions of followers. You know, I'm sure if you collect all of your Snapchat, your Instagram, your Twitter, you've got well over a million people who are hanging out with you.
Right.
Are people trying to escape pain? Is that why you guys have such large following?
I think people are trying to escape pain, but I think people get a lot of the escaping from pain with music. I think music allows them to get away. I think though, with comedy, I was actually having this discussion with someone. I was saying that the humor in South Africa, it has a lot to do with resonance.
Yeah.
I think, like, the more people resonate with you, the better. So the more you are, like, really approachable on stage, the more people are going to gravitate towards you. So people do, to a large extent, want to escape. Like, for instance, in like, New York. Like, if I think of the New York comedy scene, man, I go, okay, there's there's so many scenes. There's the black scene.
Yeah, yeah.
There's like the seller, which is like a regular working class. It's like your regular human being. And then you have like an art scene. Mm-hmm. Now, these clubs or these performing spaces are about, I don't know, maybe 4 kilometers away from each other. Completely but the different. Audiences are completely different. So you constantly have to adjust. So as much as the people want to escape from whatever issue or problem and free their minds and think of something else, they all expect different things, right? Like the art crowd, and there was this gig. There's this gig in New York. It's on a Monday, first of all, and it starts at 11 in the evening. Okay. And it's called UCB.
UCB, yeah.
It's a UCB, UCB Chelsea,
yeah,
right?
Chelsea.
And it's like an arty gig. You tell stories, you get involved, and there's a gig on Monday as well, just before that one, which starts at about 9. So I usually go that gig and then go to the UCB one. It's in it's a Sinak Wyatt gig.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's got a gig in Brooklyn called
from
Nitrate.
The Daily Show,
from the Daily Show. When Joss do it, and he has a show, and these are like storytelling shows. And then you go uptown to the Stand.
Okay.
And it's like the people are like, "Don't tell us about sandwiches and ninjas.
Yeah, yeah.
Tell us about we want jokes, punchy." So it's what I'm trying to say is that people, you have to, and for us. For me as a South African, I find it, a lot of American acts, like if a guy comes from Chicago into New York, he struggles to adapt his act to the various audiences. Now, I go, in South Africa, we've been trained for that because we have 11 different languages.
Yeah.
So you have to tap into the nuances of all those languages. Because the guy was like, "How do you just plug in?" I said, "No, because I just, we constantly, if I'm in Bloom, I'm very different from when I'm in Polokwane.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm very different from when I'm in Maritzburg. I'm very, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I can't take a joke from KwaZulu-Natal and take it to Cape Town as it is. I got to patch it up as much.
Yeah, I'm with you. But in many ways, that's a strength and it could also be a weakness, right? So you look at someone like Kevin Hart, he's not trying to adjust. He is one, like even in every film, he's the same dude.
Well, he's found the thing that makes him funny.
Yeah.
But his funny is very universal. I think there's certain acts who just have a universal funny, and anyone can sort of plug into them. And I think Kevin Hart is one of them.
Yeah,
I think Trevor's one of those acts. Russell Peters is one of those acts. There's some acts where you have they have to have their specific audience.
They sort of rise above the diversity issue with their uniqueness.
Yeah. So okay. I'm trying to think of a musical act that like Adele.
Yeah.
Like you know, Adele just has a. I mean,
she's talking about chasing pavements. Everybody can relate to that.
Boom. Yeah. There we go. And then you get like acts like Hannibal Buress, who's like a very specific act who has his own, you know, the specific acts have a tendency to grow their own audiences in a strange way because they have to find these people from all over the place.
Got it. What did it help you growing up in Google to Cape Town, your Cape Town sort of roots and dealing with, you know, in fact, at what point was it where you realized that you can translate well to different audiences?
I haven't lived in Google in a long time, so I don't know how much of that experience I still draw from. But I do, I think from a very young age, found that just being pure honest about any situation translates to funny. I just do know.
Just raw honesty.
Not necessarily raw, just if something is going wrong and we go, "Oh, well, that's not going well." I think I remember the first time. Where I was like, okay, this is kind of a thing. We were playing cricket and we were all there. And we had these exchange students who were coaching us and they were from Britain. And we huddled up and we were getting killed. I said, "We're getting killed." And everyone in the just laughed. And I was like, "Yo, there's no..." Before, before we talk tactics and da 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 da, can we just acknowledge that right now we're getting killed? And the guy said that everyone just killed themselves, and then we composed ourselves, and then we, because in order for you to, enjoy the moment, you have to acknowledge that. Listen, this is not what we planned. It's not going well. And then everyone goes, oh yeah, okay, cool. That's off my shoulders. And I think like that's a trick with humor that you are.
But it's
tricky because you have to. That honesty has to have a certain tone. Like you can't have a discouraging tone. Mm. It has to be a pure acknowledgement tone. It has to just be like, well, I'm acknowledging the thing so that everyone feels comfortable to move forward. But I'm not going, oh, we're not going to come back. Or I just have to say, hey, this is a bit of a situation.
It's like when Chris Rock came out on the Oscars and says, you know, welcome to the White People's Choice Award or whatever.
Right.
Is that what he was doing?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's off the bat, there's this inverted commas controversy. I don't like using the word controversy because it just gets overused and it sometimes is misrepresented. But it was, there was the talk of the boycotts and the Emmys are too white and that. So that's the issue at hand. So before we move on to whatever we're going to talk about, can we just acknowledge that and get that out the way? Package it, put it on top. This is, okay, cool. We got that out the way. And then we move on. So it's like a trick. So it's like doing a corporate function for a big company. Let's say you read up on, if I did a gig for Edcon or something, and you just read about them being 800 million in the red, that's the first thing you're going to talk about. So, so you guys are not doing well.
Yeah.
Good thing I got my money in advance.
Got it.
So it's like, whatever bank you go, you guys were in trouble in the papers, whatever the case is, get out the way.
You know who gave me that advice once at a Vodacom gig, and I didn't listen and I failed. It's one of the worst gigs I've ever had in my life. It's David Kabuka. He was emceeing. He came back on stage and he was like, dude, this is a tough crowd. He's like, when you get out there, the first thing you better do is acknowledge this energy. Yeah. And I thought I knew better. Dude, I was sweating. He looked at me like, you're not serious.
you gotta acknowledge. Every situation has to. It's so crazy. So we were, the last time I did this thing publicly, and it was the Kanye West concert. So it was me, Gareth, and Pearl Tusi were hosting the thing. It was a big sponsor when Kanye played at the Dome. And Kanye was just like late, you know, and we were chilling backstage and his change room was on the other side and people were like, and the crowd is getting quite restless because they've been there at 5, it's 11, Kanye hasn't jumped on. And we bantering with the crowd. So what happens is the people start booing Pearl. Where's Kanye? Boo, we don't want to. And then I was like, this is not fair on her because, you know, she's got nothing to do with this. She's just caught up in the crossfire. So when I come out, I go, guys, you paid. You're not going to leave. Just hang 10. Kanye is coming. Mm-hmm. It's not like now. Just calm down. What are you going to do? Go home. You paid. You're here. Dressed. Da, da, da. So I was acknowledging. Listen, we're all in this together. I'm not Kanye's friend. I'm not Kanye's manager. There's nothing I can do.
You know what I mean?
Kanye is going to come out when Kanye comes out. Like, you act like you've not seen the crazy things this guy does on TV. Now you want him to be here on time, please. So I come back. I'm like, oh, man, how did you survive that brutal crowd? I was like, because I just told them this is what's happening.
Got it.
And then so it's like, so with. Comedy, you learn these tricks. But here's the thing I hate about comedy, especially hanging out with comedians. There's this trick of trying to turn conversations if you ever have a very serious conversation with a comedian and he's and you're making a better point, he'll turn it into a funny situation. And you're like, no. No. This is a very serious conversation.
Yeah.
Let's keep it there. And that's a trick that people, that comics use. They're able to maneuver through life and through society, even like just in dialogue and just interactions with humor. I know exactly when to switch it on. I just go, okay, boom, and then I'm out of that situation. I mean, I can't really give an example now. So I really hate it when I spot someone doing that to me.
Got
I go, hey, listen, man, we were talking about fees must fall. Now you're talking about it. You know what I mean?
Got it. Your late night work, obviously, it was celebrated by a lot of people, and I'm sure you can relate to what Trevor Noah is going through, and the pressure that's placed on it, and for people to actually learn, because people look to you guys for a rational voice and logic, and in the middle of your satires, trying to find, you know, something that makes sense. How well do you think he's doing? You've actually visited him. You guys are friends. You went to his show. What are your thoughts on how well he's doing?
I think he's doing very well. Considering the circumstances, and when I say considering the circumstances, I mean to inherit such a big show. It's like if anyone took over. It's like it happened with Piers Morgan when he took over Larry King's spot. It was just a difficult thing
because
this is the cultural relevance of the show, and it means a specific thing to a specific person. So when you hand it over to someone else, they trying to make it their own thing. And
is it like Tabo and Vega taking over from Madiba?
Yeah, and then the people are like, oh, this statesman is not as friendly. And then you're like, ah, it's not the same thing, you know? So, but I think he's done well in trying to stamp his own identity on the show. But the thing with these shows, it takes a very long time to get your rhythm going. I mean, Seinfeld ran for about 12 seasons.
Yeah.
They only started getting their rhythm right on halfway through, which was the sixth season.
Oh wow!
Yeah, it takes forever, right? And that was a huge sitcom, and same with Jon Stewart. It probably took him like 5-6 years to get his feet, and then you get. But I mean, they're doing well in terms of ratings. They the number one rated show now on comedies on the late night slot.
Yeah.
But for 18 and 35 year olds, I think that's the age.
Sure.
So that's good. I mean that's good. Yeah. And I mean he's got a good set of people around him, so you'll be good.
Do you have more ambitions to be in that type of space? So if someone calls you and goes, look, you know, we want to go to that next level in that sort of late night space, whether it's in South Africa or the UK or US or anywhere, would you be open to it?
That's something I would do. But I also just don't like, I haven't worked like a 9-to-5 situation in a very long time. I like my time and space. And so for me, what's important is to be able to work because first and foremost, I'm a stand-up. So the thing that gives me the most happiness is probably getting up on stage and doing stand-up. So if I can't do that, I'm going to be unhappy.
Okay.
Meaning that whatever I'm doing in replacement of that
is not going to
be fulfilling to me.
Got it.
So I got to, whatever is happening, be still able to do stand-up.
So I have to go here, because if you have a show that's nominated a couple times for Emmy and its ratings are amazing, what happens?
Because a lot of people in television in South Africa still want to own your stuff.
Okay.
So, but that wasn't our problem in this particular case. We were trying to go a certain direction and try to be part ownership in this thing, and we were trying to go a different creative direction. And the channel were trying to do something else. So we never...
Your talent, not owners.
Pardon?
Where they were like, you're talent. We're owners.
Pretty much. And yeah. so we were fighting that battle of like, okay, cool, let's try, you know, let's 40%, 10%. Can we just fight? And they were like, no. And we were just like, well, okay, that doesn't work. And then creatively, we weren't meeting, agreeing on a lot of stuff eventually, just in terms of format and timings and this, that. And we just, okay, let's try to rebuild something else and take it elsewhere. And I mean, I think the problem even now, we do have a show that exists and has a pilot, but the problem is that people just want to own stuff.
Yeah.
But then they just want to own and sit on it. It's not like they want to take it to MIPCOM and sell it to Switzerland. They just want to keep it for the sake of owning it. So it's like pointless. You know what I mean? Because you're at the Emmys and someone wants to buy the format of Late Night News. There were two guys wanted to buy the format of Late Night News, but we were like, we can't sell it to you because we don't own it. I have no motivation to sell something I don't own. I mean, there's no... Do you understand what I mean?
Exactly.
So we were like, we're going to have to pass on these sales because there's no benefit to it. And this is what we're trying to communicate. So if you're in a space where you can... You can benefit from what, you know what I mean? This is the economic conversation that we're constantly having.
I'm with you. So moving forward, just sort of just thinking about, you know, the role of comedy and how it can really sort of help usher society forward. You know, if you any leader, what are some of the critical lessons a leader needs to be thinking about relative to this whole sort of like, if you're in a board meeting, right? And You are the CEO of Transnet, and things are going bad. So, you know, a train is falling off or whatever, you know. I don't know how a train falls off, but if a train falls off, you know, how do you deal with the awkwardness, both in the media as well in the boardroom?
I think, well, I've never encountered a situation like that, but I would like to think that the defensive route is not the way to go. I think sometimes I watch dudes just get defensive. And I've seen people just go, actually, you're right. We actually not doing so well, but we're working on it. And we're going to try solve this problem. Hopefully, we'll solve it in the time frames that we've given ourselves. And instead, I think if you're being honest with yourself, like if you can laugh at yourself, which means that you can be honest with yourself about yourself, and you can go, well, which is a very difficult thing. It took me a long time to allow people to, like if you get roasted, you know, when you allow yourself to get roasted.
Yeah,
I generally hate that. But I think of late, I'm like, it's always good to know the public perception of yourself.
Because that's what roasting is, really.
Right, that's what...
At the highest level, actually.
At the highest level, that's public perception of yourself. So if you're being roasted, there are reoccurring themes. And those reoccurring themes are either a perception or a truth.
Yeah.
Right? So then... So then, if you are in a situation in a corner like that, trains are falling off. You have to go like Telkom. Even if you work at Telkom, right? You have to acknowledge Telkom sucks.
Yeah.
Like even if you like, I'm the PR person, you gotta go, we suck. Then you do. They suck. Like they suck.
Got it.
Like I'm trying to disconnect my subscription or whatever they call it, like my internet. And they said, yeah, go to that pile, take a form, fill it out, and send that to our cancellation department. How bad is your business when you guys have an email to a cancellation department?
That's deep.
How many people are canceling their contracts for you to go, well, we're going to have a cancellation department?
Yeah, like a whole
division. The whole division
that
deals with people who are canceling.
So if you're the head of that division, you need to acknowledge that.
Like, you know, so there's certain companies that just suck. And you suck. That's it.
Got it. All right. And I think that's part of one of the things that I've enjoyed about your comedy is that you're pretty brash about and pretty open about letting people know when they suck. But have you found situations where, like, truth can often be like a knife? It can cut and leave people bleeding. How do you deal with that? Because people are sensitive.
Yeah. Well, that includes me. I'm also, I have a great deal of sensitivity because I'm human. I'm a human being. But my harshness is usually to civil politicians who, to a large extent, are selfish. So, and I do have the platform and the voice to say, hey, man, that's a bit selfish. I mean, you have press and stuff like that, but the press is still seen as, it's the press. It's still a thing. But if a human being, just another civilian, goes, you guys suck, and this is I think they should be able to take it. It comes with the space. I mean, I would feel bad. I really felt bad when I was hosting this the SAFTAs, and I made fun of Mini Dlamini. I was like, I mean, this girl is.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
It wasn't even like I'll feel more bad about something like that. I was just the host, and we had a dead moment, and I just made, you know, fun at it a little bit. And that I'll feel bad about, because I mean, she's just a young lady doing her thing, and sure. I'm just making fun. But I won't feel bad for making fun of, I don't know, Musi Maimane or Figile Mbalula, you know, one of the ministers. Yeah,
and when you do, and there's like, have you been in a situation where there was literally like, almost like bloodshed socially, like where you left a this?
Nah, not really. It never gets there with me. I think also like with comics, we get away with way more than what anyone else would. So if I say I've heard Mbalula say I suck on national TV, which is I was like, that's quite funny. And but it never gets to, I think with me, it's always remained healthy banter.
Got it.
It's never accelerated to a point where I have no control of what's going on, or now lawyers have to be called, or mothers have to be, hey, your son is out of control. No, it's always.
Did you feel bad? I know you gotta go, but did you feel bad when the whole country sort of rallied around Casper, and you made a joke around him, you know, needing to fill up the dome or whatever. But did you feel bad afterwards? Like, people got behind him and they saw this as a moment in history, and you had been giving him a hard time.
Well, I wasn't really. This is the issue of being like sensitive. So sometimes it's Twitter, it's open, you know. First of all, a lot of people didn't think he was gonna fill up the dome.
Yeah.
I just admit I was just vocal about it. So everyone I spoke to, people who were there, didn't think he was gonna do it. And when he did it, I was like, oh wow, this is amazing.
Did you say that on Twitter?
Yeah, I said it to him. I tagged him. I said, I didn't think you were gonna do it.
Okay.
You did it. Kudos. You know, and it was that. But that's how I engage on Twitter. I call out the bullshit all the time. The reason where this starts is he was complaining about Pharrell, right? Pharrell. So I was like, yo, why are you complaining about Pharrell? Like, so I was, this is quite crazy. I was saying to a friend of mine, and she was saying, we're talking, and she was saying to me, she needs to make more money so she can be happy. I said, no, the money is never going to make you happy. Right, the money is not. You gotta work on your happiness before the money comes.
Because
when the money comes, it's not gonna make you happy. So I was going, this is what I was poking at the most. I was going, well, you're the most successful rap act in the country. Your music is selling more than anyone else. You worried about Pharrell? Who you worried about, Woolworths and Pharrell? That's what I was saying. Right, and he took it out of that context of no. I said, yo, man, it's fine. You weren't at the board meeting of Pharrell. You don't know what their strategy is. You all you're saying is that they're not giving local acts an opportunity. No, local acts are supported. More people buy your music more than Pharrell's music in South Africa. I don't get the complaint. You're whinging right now, and I'm not with you. And I'm talking as a person who likes your music. And that was it, right? And then it sort of like accelerated. So people were like, he's hating on him. And I call out anyone who's on the bullshit. If you're on the bullshit, I get called out. That's what Twitter is.
Sure.
Someone says some bullshit, you call them out. That's it.
Got it.
It's the same like what happened with Fees Must Fall. That got good crazy. I was like, well, oh man. Okay, cool. My Australian people are calling me on Skype. They want to have a brainstorm.
All right, awesome. Thanks for coming on. There's a lot. We gotta have you on again. I know you love hip hop. We're gonna go out with some cool music.
Oh, you gotta listen to Nasty C. Oh my God,
Nasty C.
Oh, I don't even know where he's really from, but he's amazing.
Next time you come on, we're gonna talk about how you ended up on this MTV thing, and then does this sort of list matter and all of that sort of stuff. But we appreciate it. Enjoy the call.
We appreciate
you coming in to hang out and sort of helping us sort of. I think we got some Nasty C on. We're going to drop it now. We'll be right back.
He's
talking
he's
comedy
fire.
And life.
You know you right, my nigga. Ever gonna quit?
Hell
no. Hell no. Will I dumb it down a bit?
Hell no.
Hell no. Am I running with the shit?
I really am.
Fucking right. I burn the levels to this bitch.
Sawdust.
You know you right, my nigga.
Well, that was Loiso Gola, the two-time Emmy-nominated comedian who is doing a lot of really great work around the world. It's very controversial, and I love how he confronts truth and the idea of truth and the reality that most of us are very uncomfortable with. The truth causes a lot of pain in the long run. He confronts it in the short term and deals with it very sort of boldly and so forth, and it's not always popular for it, but in the end, people know where he stands. Like he says, when he dealt with the Fees Must Fall thing, when he dealt with the Casper issue, and many other social issues, he goes in fairly hard. And he's the type of comedian, either you love him or you hate him or whatever, but the bottom line is that he confronts truth. And the big lesson today is that in comedy, in dealing with complex issues, being straightforward about the issue up front is very, very helpful. That was the big takeaway from Mr. Loiso Gola. Thanks so much, Loiso, for popping in. I found an article on Inc.com that talked about the lessons from people like Chris Rock, who deal with social injustices in a very, very sort of bold and upfront way. If you watch the Oscars, you could see that Chris Rock, one of the beautiful things he did was he dealt with this issue of Black Lives Matter and race in a most fascinating way by also being hard on black people. It was beautiful how he called out Jada Pinkett Smith. He told Jada, he's like, you know, why are you acting like you were invited? He's like he wasn't invited to Rihanna's panties. He got very edgy with it, and a lot of people in the black community were offended. But the bottom line, at the end of the day, he's telling the truth, is that there are bigger social issues. Yes, it needs to be dealt with, and Black Lives Matter, and we know Black Lives Matter, and the Oscars need to change and evolve, but there is a higher, sort of more conscious way to engage it. And I'm really glad that he didn't back down and not host the Oscars, because people were telling him to boycott it. Boycotting wasn't the way. The way move forward is to confront it like Chris did. And yes, he ruffled feathers on both sides, but the big leadership lesson is to confront awkwardness up front. So I'm going to give you four tips that I found on Inc.com. If you are a leader and you are in the boardroom, or you're dealing with a team of people and there are racial issues, gender issues, any sort of issue that no one wants to talk about, the first thing is to commit to the awkwardness and just put it out there up front. And as a speaker and a person who speaks on the content that I write about, I found that whether it's an audience of 50 people or 1,000 people, if the conference is not going well, put it out there. Say it up front. As Loiso stated, just say it. This conference is not going well. This conference kind of sucks. Let's turn this conference around. And boom, before you know it, you got the crowd on your side. You got the crowd and the leadership delegation on your side. Number two, spread thoughtfulness and positivity into a discouraging topic. And Loiso also talked about that. And that's the thing. You're going to confront this awkwardness. You can't have bad negative energy, because you're only going to make it worse. Huge, huge point. Number three, keep your message consistent. You can't flip-flop. What I loved about Chris Rock's sort of opening monologue is that he went straight for it, and he kept his finger on the pulse through the entire conversation. That was literally comedic genius. And if you, I'm sure the Oscar is going to come on again. I'm sure it comes on again. But watch it if you're a leader, and watch how he deals with it. He put out truth, things that were happening. He says to that what I loved about how he took a poke at black people. He was like, "Why are we doing it this year?" He said, "Out of 88 Oscars, at least 72 didn't have a black person nominated. So why this year?" And it was a way to highlight the extreme measure and the level of emotions that were brought into the conversation that hadn't been brought in previous years. So that was very important. And then finally, number four, avoid any traditions that could turn into a blooper. There were a couple technical glitches at the Oscars, but Chris and his professional team were already prepared to be able to handle it. And I've seen plenty of times where leaders, speakers, teams, people, something happens, the power goes out, people have no idea what to do, they freak out, and the thing completely flops. So it's critically important to know in those moments that you have prepared, that you have something to do that can fill those gaps. Loiso highlighted earlier that when Kanye West came to town, he, Gareth, and Pearl Tusi were sort of hosting. The crowd was giving Pearl a really difficult time because of, you know, they had been there since 5, it's now 11 o'clock. But he gets on stage, calls out the awkwardness, calls out the fact that Kanye is Kanye. What do you expect? Kanye is crazy. And then before you know it, people are laughing. They're a bit more relaxed. Kanye comes on. Everybody has a good time. So I know it's difficult because we all are sensitive, as Loiso said. We are human beings. But the reality is this. By going in, getting the awkwardness out of the way, it's kind of like getting the phone number for a young, beautiful woman at the mall. In that moment, everybody's uncomfortable. And one of the things when I was single, what I would do is I would call out the uncomfortableness. I would put it out there on the table. Like, this is really uncomfortable because you are beautiful. And I know everybody is talking, trying to get your number today. But this is what I'm thinking. And once you do that, they'll smile, they'll laugh, and you'll have a good time. So anyway, if you're single, that was a tip to help you with your numbers game. Does people even, Rianette, I'm going to bring Rianette in now as we transition to our cyber health feature, but I think I'm a little old school. I just realized as I was talking, I'm actually old. People don't go up to people in the malls anymore, do they? Right? They just swipe on Tinder and they just sort of inbox people.
They say, find my friends.
Yeah. You've been out of the game for a while. Do you even know about Tinder?
What are you talking about, Tim? I've been married for almost 11 years.
No. So 11 years ago, the only way to get somebody's number is like you had to write them a letter.
Oh, come on, Tim. Luckily, not that bad.
But what did you have?
It must be
MySpace.
Really...
Did you have MySpace 11 years ago?
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay. Is that how you met your husband?
No, luckily we were in school together, so it was easy for him.
Okay. He could see you every day.
But it must be tough. But I mean, now if you think about online dating, I think the way you meet someone has changed, but the fact that it's still awkward and that you still need to make that first move,
sure,
it's still an awkward moment.
I want to just close out this sort of session before we head into cyber health. I'm looking forward to your bite today. Thank you so much. But I want to make sure that everybody gets the gist of why we had Loiso on today and why it's really important to have him on Brains and Brands. Is because they have masterfully, comedians at his level have mastered the ability to really call out difficult social issues in a way to get people talking, to encourage dialogue. And as a leader, we don't do that enough. We try to push things, we brush things under the rug. And before you know it, the rug is filled and become filthy and bacterial. And the infestation starts to eat away at the organization and eat away at the leadership culture. So it's very important to continue finding a way to find the courage inside of yourself to be able to confront complexity. And it's uncomfortable. No one wants to talk about it. People have this thing of let's move on, but it doesn't work. You have to confront things, heal, move forward. So that's the big lesson for today. Follow Loiso Gola, Loiso Gola, G-O-L-A, on social media throughout many platforms. I think he's on Snapchat, Instagram, all over the place, sharing ideas. He's traveling the world. He's got a DVD coming out. So check him out. Support this local phenomenal talent. You can see South Africa is very blessed and talented to have incredible comedians from Bo David Cow, to Loiso, to Trevor Noah, to all these sorts of Casper on this station. There's just tons and tons of good quality comedians. And let's continue to support them because they help us deal with life. Now, we transition to our cyber health feature sponsored by Safety Net with RiaNet.
Thank you so much for joining. And if I could show you what this studio looks like today, there's beautiful sunlight coming through the blinds. And I love the fact that there's light, because today I'm going to share a tool with you that in cyberspace brings us light. For me, relationships is so key to our daily lives. And I'm passionate about the way we nurture relationships and we look after them. And one very important ingredient is time that we need to spend together. And we know that, and I've spoken about digital rehab centers in the past and the fact that we need them because people are glued to their screens most of the time and way too much of the time. And what we need is time with each other and spending, talking to each other, not just next to each other, doing our own thumb walking. So to nurture relationships and build them, we need to spend time together. And I have spoken about many of these aspects and the fact that we need to use tools out there. And at SafetyNet, we love to share tools that can make our lives easier and add value. And today, there's one specific one I would like to highlight to you, which will help you with your relationships and help us to manage the time our kids spend online. So I would like to tell you about a brother and his sister startup based in South Africa, who have developed an app that assists parents in dealing with the excessive screen time and screen time addiction with kids. It is called TimeWise Parental Control, and it was developed by Barend and Robin Craven. So shout out to the South Africans. You've actually gone and addressed this issue. So TimeWise Parental Control allows you to remotely control your child's usage of the Android tablet or phone from your Android tablet or iPhone. So you don't even need to be in the same room and quickly sneak in while they go to the toilet or something, or while they grab a sweet. You can actually do this remotely. You get to set a schedule of when the phone or tablet will be locked and unlocked, as well as set up individual permissions for each app that will be locked or unlocked according to this schedule. If the child needs to use the phone or tablet out of the scheduled time, they can send an unlock request from the tablet to your phone where you are, and you can either allow or decline depending on how your rules are set. They have also included a handy little feature called Don't Ask Again, which will let you block the request for a present period of time. So, I mean, when you're sitting in a meeting and you keep on receiving these please unblock, unblock, unblock requests, it could be quite challenging. So I like that feature that you can actually say, don't ask again. With this TimeWise app installed, you will be able to ban any apps, for example, the browser, by using the banned apps list. And next week, I'll be talking about the fantastic news from Google with their new Kindle or Kiddle search engine. But then also message your child over the integrated TimeWise Messenger. And this is quite fun, because if people didn't know this, WhatsApp has got strict guidelines in terms of the age restriction. So if you're not 16, you're not really supposed to be using it. So this is a nice alternative for younger kids who want to use a messenger app to communicate. Then you can receive a call me please from your child, which is sent from the locked app screen on their phone. And then another one that I love, because we as parents get worried, is you can locate your child through the TimeWise app, which opens the address in your default maps app with a click of a button to navigate to your child's location. So there's lots more about this app that can be shared, and I would recommend that you go and watch their video clips on YouTube, and you can also visit their website at TimeWise, and it's with a Z, TimeWise Parental Control, just to see what else they've got. And I really like the video clips because it explains to you exactly how to install it, how to do it, and there are two apps that you need to make this work. So the one is obviously the TimeWise Parents app, and that part is free. And then you need the one for the TimeWise Child app, and that is for £1.50 per month per device, and please go to the Google Play Store to download it and check it out. And in the meantime, let's look at the amount of time we spend and our kids spend. Maybe it's time to actually time them to see, just do some research. But then, of course, it's a challenge because we as parents have to put our phones down and watch them. So from Safety Net's point of view, we always ask you to please be responsible online and be careful with the fingertips that you use to either make someone's day or hurt their feelings. And join us on Facebook and Twitter at Safety Net, S-A-V-E-T, Net, and join the conversation.
Thank you so much, Renette. As always, this TimeWise app, it sounds like almost like a parent is kind of like, it's not like a stalker, parent stalker app, is it?
No, Tim, because you know what? I think that's actually a very good thing that you're talking about now. Many parents feel guilty and they are so, what's the word, twisted around the pinkies of their kids. But as we teach our kids to wear their safety belts when we drive, as we keep our homes safe with the relevant security and burglar bars in some places and other places, it's different types of security, but we keep our kids safe. We teach them to look left and right and left again before they cross the road. This is our responsibility as parents to teach them good manners online. We need to give them good structure in terms of how much time you need to spend online. Then it's home, you know, we've got to be balanced, and this is where it starts. But it's also a challenge for parents if you consider how many kids need to ask a parent, please can you play with me, please can I have your time, please stop reading your mails. No, but just one more, just this message, just this. So no, I don't think it's stalking. I think it's good parenting, being responsible.
Got it. Is there a point though where Does a child have rights? Is there a point where a child has privacy rights online? Like when they become 16, is there an age where you can't as a parent go into their stuff?
It's a very good question, and it's part of the digital dilemma that we're talking about, because each home has different rules and different ways of looking at the situation. And I think that's why the social media service providers and so forth, the platforms, have their rules in place, because they know what a child or a young person should be exposed to. And from a parent's point of view, it really depends on what you want them to see. I mean, there's been cases where Safety Net, heard of cases where a child's parent was called into the school. The headmaster says, listen, I want to say that your child had pornography on his phone and we don't allow that there. And the mom was upset because how can you waste my time? I don't mind if my child watches pornography. Meantime, another parent is really upset because now her child, who she's been really keeping safe from this type of material, is seeing it on another boy's phone or another girl's phone. So it's
interesting how just the regulation of this and how the evolution of this shifting is going to be really critical. It's like 50 years ago, you could beat a child or spank a child and punish a child in a way that you can't now. Maybe that's what's happening in the digital space, is that there are things that will evolve, especially around privacy, that when it first came out wasn't. But I think children are going to get privacy rights at some stage.
I agree with you, Tim, but from a neuroscience point of view, you know, if you think about the images they see at such a young age, even if it's a friend's phone and they get exposed to it, we cannot help that. We cannot stop that to happen. So those images are locked in their brains. And how do we wipe that out? There's no way. Mm-hmm. So from a neuroscience, you know,
I completely get you as a mom, and I understand. So I want you to pursue, though, some research on privacy rights for youth and what ages, because I'd love us to have that conversation at some point. At what age and what is the trends, you know, what are the trends that are happening in that space? I think it'll be a healthy conversation.
I'll do that, because last week I attended a very interesting conference, and the debate was about what is a child in, you know, how old,
yes,
and how do we see the ages of children versus young people versus young adults. And I will share some information from that.
Sure. I think WhatsApp is going to have to amend their age restriction, because at some stage, because WhatsApp has become the go-to place to communicate with kids, you can't say that a 14-year-old child who has a phone, which is almost normal now, can't be on WhatsApp.
Yeah, I think the problem with WhatsApp is that anyone can access you.
No, I
you
get it.
You can still block them, but I this is then they've already sent you that image. Or
yeah.
No, I mean, that's why I'm saying it's an interesting, fascinating space that you're in, and the work you're doing is really good work because we need to have these conversations because it's new. It's all new stuff. Like we don't have a history to draw upon. We can't look at our grandparents and see what they did with WhatsApp because it wasn't there. So anyway, keep up the good work. Thank you so much.
You.
Please follow Rianette on Twitter as well, at Rianette, and at SafetyNet on Facebook as well. Thank you so much. And keep the laughter going and confront difficult moments with comedic mindsets, and your leadership attributes will get to the next level. We're going to go out with my man on the show. I don't know what we planned, but something tells me it's going to be a good song. Louis Vega starring Tony Morelli. Thank you so much.
Unbranded on CliffCentral.com.